It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Today on the program, we continue an ongoing conversation about the costs of emergency room care in Iowa. We'll explore how increases in ER patients with mental illness, those covered by Medicaid, and those with chronic illness crowd emergency rooms with unnecessary costs to patients and to hospitals, and what Iowa care providers are doing to relieve this ER congestion. First, Iowa Public Radio's Duri Bouscarin joins us to introduce us to a so-called frequent flyer, or a super user of the emergency room. Hi, Duri.
Hi, Ben. How are you?
I'm doing fine. Teresa Brown is someone you talk to. She used to end up, I understand, at the emergency room at least once a week, and she's now participating in St. Luke's Emergency Department Consistent Care Program. Duri, you sat down with her last week to talk about her involvement in the program. Why was Teresa going to the emergency room once a week? What was she struggling with?
Now, Teresa's case is like a lot of people who end up visiting the emergency room very often. She is dealing with multiple chronic conditions, including COPD, which is a chronic lung disease, diabetes, asthma, and Teresa had so many doctors and so many medications that she was having a really difficult time managing her conditions. And they would present as emergencies. She would have breathing episodes multiple times in a given month. She said it was about once a week. And what I got from talking to Teresa was that she really, it was really difficult and psychologically heartbreaking to go through this.
In fact, there's a clip from your interview. Let's listen to where Teresa describes just that. It's not just the physical, but the emotional state she was in before she enrolled in this community care program.
It was pretty bad then before the program, before I got into the program. I was at the hospital a lot in the ER. And before the program, it was like I threw my meds away at one point. I was flushing them. I just didn't care anymore. Tired of going through all those, the pain, the medications and everything. I just felt really bad and depressed and, you know, didn't care. I just figured take me off the pills, or if I took myself off the pills, because the doctors won't. And I took myself off the pills, and all I did was end up in the hospital, admitted, because then everything goes bad if I don't take my medication. And I just wanted to give up before the program, but I don't feel that way anymore.
This is interesting, Duri, because Teresa there talks about the program like it's not just a physical care program to her, but an entire support system. Did you get that sense?
Absolutely. What these doctors found is that a lot of people who visit the emergency room multiple times, more than 12 times in a year, are dealing with a chronic condition that they just haven't been able to manage. They might have a difficulty getting rides to primary care providers, or they may not be in touch with preventative measures. And in fact, there was a study in New York City in 2007 and found that 73% of people who visited the emergency room more than 10 times a year had any chronic condition. And so here, Teresa is talking about how dealing with so many different diagnoses and so many different medications, sometimes she just needed someone to talk to. And through this coordinated care program at St. Luke's, the case manager, Sally Selfridge, actually is able to be there for her and talk to her on the phone when she's having a difficult time managing her prescriptions, because sometimes that's really all someone needs. And it's kind of amazing that something as simple as having someone to go to and someone to talk to about what you're going through can keep someone out of the emergency room.
I could call Sally any time, day. I don't know if it's before 4 o'clock, but I can call her any day, Monday through Friday, and she's there for me. And she helps me out with medications. And if I need them organized, she made me a calendar for all my appointments to take with me. She sent me a lot of information on foods that I can have and shouldn't have, and because I'm only allowed so much salt a day, 2,000 milligrams from the heart doctor. But Sally, she's always been there. And I consider her as my friend, not just a social worker.
Wow, we really get a sense of that relationship. And you got to see some of the resources, Duri, that Sally gave Teresa. She had a medication list, a calendar. And after looking through those lists, did you recognize the need?
Absolutely. I mean, I don't think many of us know what it's like to have so many multiple chronic diagnoses and to have to, gosh, I was thinking, what would I do in that situation? How would I keep track of 6 doctors and 36 medications and knowing, okay, if my weight fluctuated this much in the morning, this is who I have to call and see if I take a water pill as opposed to something else. And I think that it's a lot of credit to Teresa for the work that she's been able to do in going and learning how to manage her diagnoses. And she says that she's started to feel her health improve for the first time in years.
So, Duri, how is Teresa doing now under this new program?
Teresa told me that she's doing really well. She's been in the program since it began right at the beginning of 2012. So they're going on their 3rd year. And she says that she's been able to stay out of the emergency room. She has a number of specialist doctors and a primary care physician that she visits. And she said that she did visit the emergency room a couple weeks ago, but it was for a small bone fracture in her back. So it was an acute emergency where she needed care immediately.
Okay. Iowa Public Radio's Duri Buscarin, thank you so much.
Thanks for having me.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Perhaps you're someone, or you have someone you know, who is a frequenter of the emergency room. How are you or that person paying for it? We'd have to love to have you join our conversation today as we talk a part of our continuing conversation about the costs of emergency rooms and how to bring those costs down while delivering more effective service and how this fits into the Affordable Care Act, 1-866-780-9100, River to River at iowapublicradio.org. Check out our Facebook page and leave a question or comment there, or tweet us at IPR Talk. Now joining us, a couple of people involved with the program you just heard outlined there by Duri Buscarin. Sally Selfridge. Is a social worker at St. Luke's Hospital in Cedar Rapids, case manager for the hospital's emergency department consistent care program. Sally Selfridge joining us by phone. Hi.
Hi, Ben.
And also with us from St. Luke's, Dr. Josh Pruitt. He is emergency medical physician at St. Luke's Hospital. And Dr. Pruitt, you see patients participating in this emergency department consistent care program. Welcome to our program.
Thanks for having me.
This is you heard the piece there, the couple of clips we heard from one of the patients you have there, Teresa Brown. Give us an overview, Dr. Pruitt, how this program works and how you achieved the outcome.
Well, at the beginning of this program in 2011, as we were planning to implement something like this, we had a social worker who worked with us in the emergency department who began noticing that we do have these frequent users of emergency services, and how can we better help them? How can we get them back into seeing primary care physicians or specialist physicians to keep them from having these emergencies, having to come to the emergency department? And so we began to identify a certain subset of patients, and that was determined to be people who'd visited the emergency department 12 times in the previous 12 months. And we started looking at their visits. Why were they coming? What was it that was driving them to come in? And certainly we had a wide variety. We had folks that were coming in because of mental health issues. We had folks that were coming in because of chronic pain issues. And then we had folks like Teresa who came in because they just weren't, again, they weren't able to manage all their multiple chronic conditions very well. Just lacked all the resources that they needed to do that. And so as we identified those folks, we began to write up some care plans that were specific to each individual to be able to better target those folks and help them to get back into the medical system the best way for them to provide good care.
It sounds like individually listening to what was the problem, why they were returning again and again, and then charting a course from there rather than just putting them through the system that already existed, the ER system.
Right. Exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Sally Selfridge, as a social worker there, we heard Teresa Brown comment about your work there, looking to you for lots of advice and support, calling you a friend. What's your reaction to hearing that?
You know, I guess it overwhelms me a little bit. You know, truly the intent of the program is for these folks to have their medical needs met, but having them met in the most appropriate settings. And, of course, my role as the case manager is to assess the patient's needs and really start where they're at and investigate any barriers that they might have. And for I think for Teresa, the biggest thing was just offering that support. And for her has been is really been huge. And like I said, it overwhelms me a little bit to hear her talk about the program and how much it's impacted her life in that way. And I think, too, one of the things that I've done for her that I think was kind of a big missing piece for her was providing that bridge between all of her providers so that we could provide that continuity of care across the system.
Mm-hmm. So this is really just raising awareness of the patients, Dr. Pruitt. Education is a big part of this program.
Oh, it's huge. We have another lady who participates in our program that has bad asthma. She's just an adorable lady. Used to come in very frequently, and Sally had worked with her, and one of her big triggers for having these asthma attacks that would lead her to come to the emergency department was the fact that she was smoking. And Sally worked with her, helped her get into a program, helped her to actually stop smoking. And we still see this patient from time to time, and she always has the biggest smile on her face, and she'll, as soon as she sees me, she says, "Oh, Dr. Pruitt, I've been smoke-free for so many days." And she's over a year smoke-free now, and just that educational piece, it's just huge, the relationship that Sally has with these patients, helping them to identify those needs and educating them about them.
How many patients are in part of this consistent care program at St. Luke's, Sally?
To date, as of April 1st, 2014, we do have 390 patients enrolled in the program.
Mm-hmm. And it only started back in when?
We started January 1st, 2012.
Mm-hmm. So has it's really blossomed. As you've seen the successes here, you've increased the numbers?
Well, what happens on a monthly basis, we get a report of individuals who've met that 12th visit criteria, and then we enroll them in the program. So it's an ongoing enrollment process.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Pruitt, based on what you already know, this is a program that hasn't been around that long, but how much do these super users of the ER cost your system, and how much are you saving?
Well, we have very firm numbers on patients that we enrolled in the very first year of the program. So from January 1st to December 31st of 2012, we enrolled 126, Sally, that we enrolled that first year?
226.
226, that's correct. So 226 patients we enrolled the first year of the program. We saw their visits go from 2,601 visits down to 881 visits. And just looking at facility charges on those patients, we went from $2.76 million in 2011, which would have been their baseline, down to just over $1 million in 2013. So a very significant decrease there of about $1.7 million. You add to that the savings from 2012 and the additional folks that we've enrolled in 2013, and we're estimating about $2.85 million in savings just on the facility costs alone. Mm-hmm. On the patients that we've enrolled in the program.
Now, this program does cost something itself, right? You have to include that as an extra cost, right?
Sure, it does, and really most of that cost is actually in the salary of our care coordinator. And Sally, you're not making $2.85 million a year yet, right?
Not yet.
Okay.
So, Sally, so how many social workers do these patients rely on? With 390 now, there must be more than just you there, Sally.
No, there's
no?
Not. We do have wonderful ED social workers. We have three that are employed through the ED and are there daily from 9 to 9, and they are wonderful counterparts because I can't be here 24/7. So they will visit with those folks when they come in if I'm not available. But as far as case managers, strictly for these patients that are enrolled in the EDCCP, it's me.
Mm. How do you, Sally, how are these people, these patients identified that are suitable for this program?
Through our performance improvement department, we have a monthly report that they run that'll identify those patients who've reached that 12th visit.
Mm-hmm. This has been a tremendous success to reduce the number of visits by, 26%, is that right, to the ER?
More than that. Let me. It reduced the visits, I think, down to about 26% of the original.
Down to 26.
I can run that number here real fast.
Uh-huh.
We're about. It's about a 64% reduction in the number of visits on that initial first year's enrollment.
With that dramatic number and the dramatic savings that you cited earlier, I have to believe that other hospitals are looking to you. Are you having curious people turn up or call, contact you, and say, we want to learn more?
I'll go ahead and answer that.
Okay, Sally.
Yes, we have, not only within our system, but also hospitals across the United States. We have implemented across our Unity Point system, the majority of the emergency departments are implementing a similar program in various stages. We've had some who've started last year, some who are just getting started now. We have also had some requests from other emergency departments across the United States, and even one in Quebec, Canada, who has requested some information on our program.
Mm-hmm. Let's take another example. We had multiple problems that Teresa Brown faced, but let's take the example of a migraine, Dr. Pruitt. What would be the protocol for a patient turning up in the ER with migraines repeated?
Sure. Well, we tend to try to keep our patients as we want them to feel that they're being treated, and we want them to know that they truly are being treated, essentially like every other patient, but what we want to do is make sure that we're addressing their need in a way that pushes them back toward their primary care physician or their specialty physicians. And so, someone with recurrent migraine headaches, we would probably not treat them much differently as far as medications administered in the emergency department. We tend not to use opiate medications anyway for headaches, and so because there's really an addiction potential there, so we try to stay away from those anyway, so we treat the headache. But the thing that would be different with these folks is that they're going to get a phone call from Sally the next day going, hey, what's going on? Were you unable to get in with your regular doctor, or are the medications you're on not working? Can we get you back in to talk with someone about how to really, the main goal of this program is preventing the emergency from happening. Emergencies are going to happen, and we all understand that, and people who have bad migraine headaches, they're going to come in from time to time, but there ought to be something we can do to help you not get into that emergent situation and require emergency care.
Mm-hmm. With a dramatic decrease in the number of ER visits here, I wonder how this stacks up when we look at whether this makes business sense for the hospital. You have fewer people requiring fewer services in your ER. Does that impact the bottom line? If so, how?
Well, I will tell you that despite the fact that we've had the reduction in the number of so-called frequent flyers in the emergency department, our census overall has not decreased. So there are people out there that still are requiring emergency care and are coming in. So our overall numbers for the year have not decreased dramatically. Now, Sally may be able to comment more directly on finances from the hospital as she kind of reviews those reports more frequently than I do. But
mm-hmm. Sally?
Well, I think, of course, there's going to be a reduction in revenue. And the honest answer to that is yes, there is. But I think when you look at overall, quality of care for patients and truly what's in the best interest of the patient, and for them is to have that consistent care that's provided by their primary care physician. You know, and then of course you can look at cost avoidance of those folks who we either don't get reimbursement for because they don't have insurance, or they have a you know, a peer source that reimburses on a very low rate. So I mean, there are some things to look at there, but overall, it really is what's in the best interest of the patient.
I understand, Sally, that you even had someone call while they were having a heart attack. People wondering if they're having a heart attack, if this is an emergency situation?
No, not quite. I had a gentleman that I worked with quite a bit when we first started the program, spring of 2012, and did a lot of education with him on, you know, things that his primary care physician could do for him versus what types of ailments would bring you to the emergency department. So he called me one afternoon just to clarify that if he were thought he were having a stroke or a heart attack, then that would be an appropriate use of the emergency department.
Mm-hmm. So the public at large is getting a little bit of education about what is and what isn't suitable for an emergency room, and you certainly want to make sure that everyone who has an emergency doesn't have second thoughts about coming to you.
Absolutely. If you feel like you need to be here, you should absolutely come in. We just want to make sure that the services are being used appropriately.
How does this
right.
Did you want to jump in there, Dr. Pruitt?
Well, I just was going to say what we absolutely have stressed to our staff and our other physicians in the department is that this program is in absolutely no way intended to be punitive. It's not encouraged to discourage people from getting emergency care if they need it. It's really about that education piece.
Mm-hmm. We have a minute or so left. Where do you see this program going in the future? Are you planning on tweaking it, enlarging it? What's the future look like? Dr. Pruitt?
You know, I think that the program is only going to grow as we continue to see folks that move into the area and begin becoming frequent users of the emergency department. We're going to see the numbers continue to increase. When Sally says, you know, we have 390 patients enrolled, we do. Something that you should know is that only about 7% of the patients that are on our program for a year continue to meet that requirement to be a frequent user.
So you like to usher them out of the program. Sally Selfridge, get in here before we have to take a break and say goodbye. So the future looks how to you?
Oh, absolutely. The program will continue to grow, and it will continue to be useful. And I think especially as we're moving into an era where, you know, we have the accountable care organizations and, you know, we're looking at population management. So I think there's going to be a definite increase in need.
Okay. Thank you very much. Sally Selfridge will say goodbye to you, social worker at St. Luke's Hospital in Cedar Rapids. Dr. Josh Pruitt will ask you to hang around with us, Dr. Josh Pruitt of St. Luke's Hospital. When we come back, we'll continue our conversation about the costs of ER service, how to bring those costs down, and deliver more effective service for patients, and also how it fits into the Affordable Care Act. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News, back in just a few minutes.